You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Ever wondered how would your loved ones access your wealth if something happens to you? We do everything for them while we are living, but hardly give any thought to their well-being in our absence. If something happens to us, then how are we going to protect the lives of our loved ones? That's where the role of will becomes crucial, our Vasiyatnama. Hello, I'm Aparajita from Why Not Mint Money podcast, and I have with me Pritika Kumar. She's co-founder of No Gray, a trust and will-making platform.
Welcome to Why Not Mint Money, a personal finance podcast where we help you understand basic money concepts and share strategies for you to build your wealth. So let's get started with your money journey.
Welcome, Pritika, on the show today.
Thank you, Aparajita.
Pleasure to have you here, Pritika. And let's get ahead with my first question, which is very crucial. That what is it that makes people not very serious about creating a will? What is it that holds them? Why is it a taboo topic and why don't people do it?
Yeah. It's a very important question, actually. And because we have started a company that helps in creation of wills and trusts, we've had some time to think about question deeply. We've also spoken to a few of our customers on what was really holding them back. Mm-hmm. And through reflection and these experiences, what I've discovered really is that, one of the key factors that comes into play, which holds people back, is actually procrastination. You know, like everyone keeps postponing it and thinking about how they'll do it tomorrow, next week, another month. And they just keep postponing it, actually. And I see this happening also in my home, you know, sometimes, like with my mom, like procrastinating over her will. So this is just really an element of human nature that comes into play, I believe. The other issue is, again, related to human nature, and it is around the discomfort of death, you know, at like a really deep level. Nobody wants to be really confronted with questions around their death, and so unconsciously or subconsciously sometimes we find that that people avoid making their will. I also find that sometimes there are misconceptions around like making wills. Like people believe that that the property will devolve as per their wishes regardless, even if they are to like verbally tell someone and go, the property will get distributed amongst their beneficiaries in the way that they imagine that it should be distributed. And there are various kinds of misconceptions that come into play. Sometimes it's also lack of awareness, you know, like people don't understand this concept of a will, and so it's really important to create that awareness, because in our country, we have a large amount of unclaimed assets precisely because of this reason. I also find that, you know, there is this perception of complexity around creating a will. And people believe that it is a really complicated and complex process, which is going to take a lot of time, which is going to be very, very expensive. Then a lot of times I also find in practice that indecision comes to play. So for like a lot of decision makers who are looking after the well-being of their families, and this could be people between different age groups, you know, who's people who are really responsible to get the act together for the family, I find that they're also finding it difficult to decide what kind of allocations they should make to take care of the contingency of their living the world, you know. I think these are some of my thoughts around why.
So maybe it's important to discuss what happens if somebody dies without a will. What all troubles family faces. Talk a bit about it so that people can understand the value of having a will, why it's important creating one.
Yeah. So, you know, I believe that if there is a will in place, your family is fully aware of what are the assets that you have actually created through your lifetime. One logistical issue that comes to surface in case you don't create a will is that, you know, nobody really knows after you're gone what you have created for them. And where are those assets? Where are they lying? So I think one core purpose that creating a will really solves is it really puts your life and house in order. Mm. And, you know, in case you don't have a will, then, you know, getting these assets transferred according to the default schedules that come into play in case you don't decide who you want your beneficiary to be. There are like default schedules in law which come and set in. These are the schedules that will be applied and, you know, your property will get divided as per this default schedule. And you may not even want it to get divided as per that default schedule. There are different classes of legal heirs, and there is a class one legal heir, class two legal heirs. And, you know, given the complexity of the life situations in your family, you may not want the asset distribution to take place in that manner exactly. And so it's really important to actually exercise your rights and create that will. And also, you know, a lot of times I find that it's not only the rights that we have, we also have duties towards our family members. Mm-hmm. And our wills are really a great way of actually fulfilling those duties. So if you have actually written a will, you have not only exercised your right, but you have also fulfilled your responsibility and duty as a member of that family.
So families should be aware the kind of troubles their loved ones will face in their absence and the kind of procrastination and paperwork that makes them not do it. The double or triple of it their family members will have to do.
Then it just becomes quite a painful process.
Right. Okay. So what are some nuances to keep in mind when creating a will? Because I have also heard that even though somebody has a will in place, then again, financial institutions may ask for maybe a registered will or again, succession certificate, even though will is in place. So challenges do come in the execution of will also. So what is that foolproof method to create a will so that those issues don't come up later?
So, you know, the compliances around the execution of a will still need to be followed. But having a will definitely makes the process simpler. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so some of the nuances that I feel everyone should keep in mind while creating their will is that they should be mindful of the legal requirements. And in our country, you know, there are separate laws for, say, Hindus and Muslims and Christians and Parsis. Like Hindus, Sikhs, Buddhists and Jains are in one club and the same law applies to them. For Muslims, there are Muslim personal laws that come into play. For Christians and Parsis, again, there is the Indian Succession Act which comes into play. And hence, one must look at one's rights and duties in relation to their respective religions. It's important to do that. One is that aspect, and the will must represent those legal requirements and actually fulfill them. Mm-hmm. And the best way to do that is to consult with a lawyer who has the expertise or has been practicing in this area, or is willing to read through some of these laws to make your life easier. The other thing is clear identification of your assets and your beneficiaries in your will. Everything should be clearly identified. And like full name, with the relationship, with what is the nature of the asset, where is that asset located. Clearly identify your assets, clearly identify your beneficiaries. And when you are finally allocating your assets to your beneficiaries, you must, there must be a very detailed asset distribution. And it must be like, it should cover all possible layers. Like, you know, for example, if you have a house and you want it to be divided equally between two of your children, only write this in your will, then, you know, it may not be enough and it will lead to other complexities. Like, what if one of them wants to sell it? What if one of them wants to live in it? So you have to actually think through some of these things in great depth. around your asset distribution. I think another point is on appointing of executors. So you should be very mindful of, so in a will, really the characters that come into play include your beneficiaries, those that benefit from your will. These could be your children, your friends, you could choose charities, this could be anyone actually that you choose to distribute your assets in favor of. This could be a legal entity, it could be a charitable institution, or it could be a human being, family member or non-family member, doesn't really matter. The next point I want to make is that, so there is the author of the will, the one who's writing the will, there are beneficiaries, and there are executors. What an executor really does is, he or she makes sure that after you're gone, whatever you have written down in your will be executed properly. So this executor will step in and will appoint a lawyer, will appoint some agents to run through the process, etc. Will bring the family together. Will, in some cases, you know, you see them even like very beautifully reading out the will to the family and doing this whole ceremony around, you know, the will. So your executor does this and fulfills this responsibility of actual distribution of your assets and running through the processes after you're gone. So you must make sure that your executor is a trustworthy person, is a responsible person, and is actually sufficiently compensated for their time and effort into executing your wishes, you know, because regardless of having the best intentions, they could be at a point in their life where they're not able to really give take the time out. So you must actually create like some kind of allocation to help them out with that process, so that even if they aren't able to do it all by themselves, they can appoint the right legal experts or other service providers that will be needed in this process. Then I think another point is guardianship of minors. So if you are someone who's in their 20s and 30s and have children, sometimes many of us feel that we don't need a will. But the fact of the matter is that we all need a will, and even more so if we have children, because that's where you appoint a guardian for your children. Like, life is really like uncertain, and by not writing a will, you're really like, you know, opening this or leaving this one door open where there is always a possibility that that you may leave the world today, and then, you know, there will be no guardian for your minor child. And while naturally a father is the first guardian and the mother is the second guardian, but, you know, I have also seen instances where the mother and the father leave the world at the same time, and then really leaving your child in a soft spot if you're not creating that will. So this is another thing that I want people to keep in mind when writing their wills.
Kind of scenarios must be thought through, and a lot of people simply make their spouses as beneficiary, just single beneficiary. And what if the will maker and spouse both die? Then what?
Yeah.
So having those scenarios also, number of scenarios to cover everything.
Correct. So you have to think through all the possible permutations and combinations. Then I think another aspect in the present day and circumstances is digital assets. You should also think what will happen to your digital assets. Like you may have crypto, you may have like usernames and passwords for your social media accounts, you may have like IP that you created. So don't forget about all this. You could also take into consideration tax implications. And another thing is that people believe that once they've made a will, they don't need to review it ever again. But that's not entirely true. A will should be reviewed every year, because, you know, there could be changes in your facts and circumstances. There could be marriages, there could be deaths, there could be change in assets, there could be change in life situations, life circumstances around the people that you are, you know, hoping to protect through creation of these wills. So yes, review and update regularly. It's also a great way to remain mindful of where you are in your financial journey.
How much does it cost to create a will, registering it both? And another aspect, if you were to make amends into it, if you have to update it, then what? So, again do all process all over again?
Yeah, so I'll tell you, actually creation of a will and even amending it is not a very expensive process, not to my mind at all. It should not be. Of course, if you were to go to like a lawyer in your vicinity or a law firm, the prices will vary depending upon how the lawyer values their time. But now, you know, like, for example, I can talk about the platform that we created. We created Willit, and you can actually create a will and execute it for as little as 5,000 rupees if you do it yourself. And we have this smart form, which is very intuitive, which is very dynamic, and which gives out very detailed instructions. We created this form based on our research of case laws from over 100 years. We've read through the laws in great depth in creating it. It's a full team of lawyers that has designed this. And we also give lawyer support on the finishing of this form, actually. So you can create a will for as little as 5,000 rupees and also get like about an hour of like lawyer consultation for it. If you're not comfortable with filling out the form yourself and you believe you need some more hand holding, then we have another product where we sell this will product for like under the do it with us round, where we are doing it with you, and there it will cost you 15,000 and there will be more hand holding in the whole creation process that you'll get. You'll get like, we have like a scheduled timeline, and you know, we give you homework, we guide you through the process, we review what you write. And you know, when you're writing your will, you will have to do your homework. So you will have to collect a list of your assets. You will have to think about who your beneficiaries are, all of that, and how you want it to be distributed. We will help you think about the whole process. It's almost like training for a marathon, or like training for like strength training, and we become the coaches. So you could do it anywhere between 5,000 to 15,000 rupees, actually. But if you know you have like multiple assets, there are a lot of complications, then it could also like take a little more money based on how much lawyer consultation you'll need. But if you actually apply yourself and commit to doing it, you can complete your will within 5,000 to 15,000 rupees. Now coming to registration. Now in all states in India, registration is not compulsory. Now in a state like, for example, the one state that's coming to my mind where registration is compulsory is Goa. But if you're domiciled elsewhere, then, you know, you can check your state-specific legislations. You can have a lawyer check it. You can come to us. We can have it checked for you. You may not, in all likelihood, you will not need registration if you're not in Goa or in some of the other states where it's compulsory. But where it is compulsory, actually, because will is not a compulsorily registrable document under the Central Acts, the cost of registration is very minimal. And typically, registration is only used to create more evidentiary value in case of dispute. So, for example, in a place like Delhi or Gurgaon, the government cost of registering a will is anywhere between 600 to say 1,000 rupees. And but the cost that gets added on is the whole facilitation cost, you know. Unfortunately, our public offices are used to this different kind of incentivization. And that's where the process kicks in. The agents take some amount of money. The lawyer will take some amount of money to facilitate the process for you. So it's very difficult to give you a ballpark figure of how much that registration could cost. But based on what kind of comfort and convenience you're looking at, you could be looking at a registration expenditure of anywhere between, say, 1,500 to even 25,000. Because it'll depend if you're willing to wait, if you're willing to go and facilitate it yourself, then you know you may need to pay 1,500, even 1,000 or 2,000 rupees. But if you're getting support, then you know it could start at about a 5,000. And if you want it done quickly, smoothly, you want premium services, you know, you want to just reach the office and get it done, then it could, you could be paying, you know, something like 20,000 to 25,000. But that is really the facilitation fee.
but the cost associated with it, the ecosystem cost, could be
much higher. You're right. I love the word you've used for it. Yes, the ecosystem has themselves devised their own system, and we can't beat it, you know.
Right.
Of course, with more standardization and more customization of services, these costs will also get standardized.
And now we discussed executor, and it's very difficult to find a trusted executor. And it is also advised that beneficiaries can be executor, but better to have someone else. So now talking about professional executors, what if people go for having a company as an executor, maybe having an RIA, investment advisor, or chartered accountant?
Yes, definitely. It's a great idea, and we recommend all our customers to do this, to have actually like one core but you know, Aparajita, there are a few things which are a part of our, age-old practice, where there will be someone in your friend and family circle who you trust the most, and who you will appoint as the core executor. But what we recommend to our customers is that also appoint a co-executor. What if your executor passes away? You know? So that is one contingency we ask our customers to look out for. And there also we suggest that it should be another human being. And then there should be another entity that you should choose as an executor who will support the surviving or the core executor that you have chosen. So Nogray as a company also offers co-executor services. And how it really plays out is that you may choose to appoint a company like us as a co-executor. No payment needs to be made for it as on date. And basically, when your will is getting executed, your executor can reach out to us, and we will, you know, share how much the execution services will really cost at that point in time with your executor. So that way we watch through the whole execution process.
Perfect. And now again, a very practical problem that a lot of families are facing, where children are based abroad and parents are living in India, and if they are creating a will, they will have movable, immovable properties. So what should they keep in mind for tax efficient way to will their properties away to their children?
Great question. So we see this happening a lot, where the children intend to either live abroad, not come back, or the assets are everywhere, and so execution of a will or multiple wills is going to be really a nightmare, and can be reason for like various kinds of disputes coming up. So in such scenarios, What we recommend to our customers is that, you know, you should really look at the living will route, and which is basically that you create like a trust, and you put all your assets in a trust. In that sense, you know, then executing the will, transferring the assets and all to your beneficiaries is not going to be that much of a headache, and they will be able to gain from the benefits that you have created for them through your lifetime. What happens with a will is that whether you like it or not, you are like in a state like Bombay, you will need to obtain a probate of your will. So it is like a court-driven process. So even if you have a will which is registered, you still have to go to the court and obtain a probate from the court, which will suggest that this is a valid will. Now, if you are not in a jurisdiction where obtaining a probate is mandatory, then you will still have to get some kind of a certificate from the authorities, etc., like a legal heir certificate, or in some instance a succession certificate, to get the assets transferred in the name of the beneficiaries or mutated if it's a property. And then if you have children who are living outside, you know, this is going to be a really like cumbersome process for them. And it will be a lot easier if you create a trust of your assets for their benefit.
Okay, so probably in that case, executor will sell those assets and then send the money abroad. This is how it is tackled?
That can be one way, and there are various other methods and various other mechanisms that can come into play based on your specific facts and circumstances.
All right. Okay. And when it comes to a couple, a married couple, then should they go for joint will or two wills each, for separate will for husband and wife?
You know, there is nothing stopping them from writing a joint will as long as everything is very clearly captured. But actually, it is slightly complicated to clearly capture everything for two people in one will. So, a better way of going about it is to have two separate wills. It's a cleaner way of going about things.
Mm-hmm.
Drafting it is also easier, simpler, and there is less chance of error. Because you have to really think in different layers when you are drafting a will. So right. Best to keep two separate wills so that there's no drafting error.
Okay, all right. And now talking about online will making platforms. So in that, a lot of such platforms have come in, and even banks have their subsidiary companies running such services. So what I feel is that if somebody is in the process of wants to create a will, so with online platforms, they will self-declare their information, whatever assets they have, everything. But they may not have that good understanding of ownership. Somebody told me that there have been cases where somebody self-declared that this property belongs to me, but going into details of those papers, it turns out not really. There are other claimants to that asset. So that verification of documents before creating the will and not just relying on self-declaration. So that's the challenge that I feel with online platforms. And in case of maybe a trusted lawyer having an experience in succession planning, they may proactively ask them for those documents to verify. And once that part is sorted, and then going ahead with drafting the will. So this online will making platform is
in my experience as a lawyer, and I've been practicing for a good 17 years now, I have not even seen an on-ground lawyer actually verifying whether or not a person has full ownership of an asset when they're making such a declaration in their will. This is not the kind of due diligence that a lawyer does, actually. Mm-hmm. And this document that is being written is really being written by the author of the will. So if the author of the will in his will is suggesting that he owns 100% of a house or a 50% of the house, mm-hmm. then, you know, that fact is taken at face value. It is not a lawyer's responsibility to determine whether the author of the will is speaking the truth or not.
Mm.
There is really nothing to really be concerned about in terms of the person's family either.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is misrepresenting in their will that they have 100% ownership of a house, that doesn't...
Not really misrepresenting, but being genuinely unaware of it. Because such errors may happen and people may not be aware of their ancestors' wealth or the kind of assets they have. Okay. And in a lot of cases, nominations will not be in proper shape.
Hmm. So unless the author of the will actually brings up a concern around their ownership of an asset before a lawyer, or before the person that he's consulting with, there is no way that the person will be able to determine or actually help the person's uncertainty out. Now, I don't know how the other folks are doing it. I mean, I have a broad idea because, of course, we are looking at how some of our colleagues are building similar platforms. We are aware of broadly how they're doing it. Now, we've not gone into too much detail, but how do it is that regardless of whatever product you're purchasing, you are getting access to a minimum of one call with your lawyer, where your lawyer will ask you the right questions to guide you in the right direction. And, we'll ask you some of these questions. We'll help you determine whether you actually have ownership of a specific property or not. But unless you actually come and voice your doubt around the ownership of a certain property, it is likely that such a thing will be missed out by any lawyer, even if it is a lawyer who's consulting privately, has a standalone practice or not, because these are things that are not part of actually the lawyer's scope of work when they're reviewing a person's will. Essentially, if the question comes up, then that's great, but as a lawyer, what I'm going to look at is if you have actually thought through all the different layers in terms of asset distribution, etc. I may ask you some initial questions around, is this your self-owned property? Is this your ancestral property? What is the situation here? How do you know that this is your property? But if the person comes out and says, no, I am the sole owner of this property, then a practitioner will not generally ask them to present documents. We are not going to challenge the will, because it is ultimately a very personal document. And to that extent, the enforceability of the will always be open to challenge.
Right. Yeah. So as hygiene practice, people who are creating the will, or do we call them testator? Is that the word?
We can call them a testator. I like to call them the authors of their will. I find that word more friendly.
Right. So authors of the will should be careful about it. All paperwork is proper, nominations are done, everything is in good shape before going ahead and creating the will. And if they do need advice, they should proactively ask for it from the lawyer.
Yes. And actually, when the lawyer asks them the right questions, they should give clear answers with all the probing. They should not, they should try not to hide some of these facts, because they should present the documents to the lawyer, ask for their opinion, if they are confused. Because a lot of times what I also see in our country, Prajita, is that people are also not willing to pay for legal services,
Right.
So then there is only so much that a lawyer can do.
Yeah, that is there. If somebody pays well, then obviously they'll get better services. So it's all about...
At least the reasonable amounts should be paid for correct legal services to be given to them.
Okay. Thank you so much, Pritika. You have shared valuable insights on this topic, and it's very important that this conversation goes to a lot of people and they understand the value of having a will and the process behind it.
Absolutely, Aparajita. Thank you so much for organizing this, and really we truly believe that the development of this country really starts with a will. If we are able to put our houses in order, we will be able to even put this country in order.
True. So
it's fantastic that you are hosting this this podcast, and I look forward to continue speaking to you about this and our experience around building this platform and this service for the country.
Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Aparajita.
I hope you liked the episode today. I am available on X by my handle, Apri_Sharma. And you can also look for my name on LinkedIn, which is Aparajita Sharma, and you'll be able to find my profile. For more such interesting podcasts, keep tuning into stsmartcast.com. Thank you.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HT Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.htsmartcast.com.